Episode of the Linux Action Show is brought to you by the good-looking folks at GoDaddy.com. Use our code Linux and save yourself some cash.
This week on the Linux Action Show, we've got our hands on the Raspberry Pi. Find out what you can expect from this crazy tiny little device. Plus, tracking a stolen Linux laptop, big news for WebOS, and so much more! Oh, this week! I kid you not!
The Linux Action Show! Yes! Yes!
And welcome to Season 22, Episode 6 of the Linux Action Show. My name is Brian. That guy next to me who's been gone the last few weeks is Chris.
Hey there, B-Man. Good news. Your netbook shrine wasn't for naught, Brian, because Asus is launching a new line of netbooks that run Linux.
That's right.
Yeah, Asus quietly launching, and by quiet, I mean...
super quiet.
Getting coverage on every news outlet that talks about Linux stuff that people are interested in Linux follow, so thereby getting the message out to all of the relevant audience super quiet.
Super quiet. Yeah, it's totally quiet. No one's heard of this now.
Triple EPC 1225C, B-Man.
Man, that is a sexy product name.
That is really good-looking machine, though, huh? Look at that. Look at
that.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
I don't know about the chiclet, but hold on. You know what's funny?
Yeah, chiclet's fine.
Is you, sir. Oh, my God. So I was just listening to, like, Linux Action Show episode 70 on the pre-show live stream, and... we were talking about the first Triple E PC.
Love those things.
Oh my God, you should have heard us. We were just loving it so hard.
I still love mine. Mine runs a 24/7, except for when it goes down, BBS with like all these lines, and it's fantastic.
All right, well, here's just a couple of features.
That thing is going to be in use forever.
Let's see. Is the netbook still alive? It's going to have 11.6 inch screen.
That's not a netbook.
I know,
that's
right?
A laptop.
With a 1366.
How on earth is an almost 12-inch screen...
With a 1366 by 768 resolution.
Seriously, that's not a netbook.
You can get a 1.6
qualify
or a 1.8 Atom.
This looks like a great laptop. Like, I would consider getting
20 gigs of hard drive.
I would totally consider getting this laptop, but it is nowhere near a netbook.
Remember how
that little Triple E700 that's like this big is barely type onable.
Does yours have
the
8
screens?
Gigs? Of storage or
has
four?
Eight. Yeah. The one I run the BBS on has eight. No. It has six because it has a 4 gig and a 2 gig SSD.
Yeah.
And that is a freaking netbook. It has one movable part, and that is
the fan.
That never comes on because the CPU is so slow that it cannot produce any heat at all.
That's the Celeron version, right?
Yeah, it's the Celeron 667.
So it's
going to
ship with Ubuntu 12.04, and you can get a 3
that's cool.
and 6 cell batteries, I guess.
Honestly, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
It's just not a netbook. It's just an awesome little tiny Atom-powered laptop.
Well, so you brought a toy today.
I sure did.
Do you know what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit later. But this year, and it's not like this is brand new or anything, a green screen.
Yeah, the green screen.
Keying this out a little bit. This is a Raspberry Pi. I'm holding my hand here. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later, a little more in depth.
Yep. And of course, also, Matt's going to stop by with a how-to on how to track your Linux laptop if it gets stolen.
I disagree with that.
And it's software I've actually used to track Android before. It's open source, top to bottom. And Matt's got a how-to
top to
on
bottom.
That. Yeah, you like that?
Up here and then down here?
Oh, yeah.
Whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, fancy.
You've got an awesome distro pick that we're going to get to. I've got an awesome Android pick. But before we do that, Danica wants to say good morning to Mr. Brian Lunduke from GoDaddy.com. There you
zoom
go. Wait.
Zoom,
oh, there we go.
Danica.
I put it right between us and then
Danica.
Just down
really
a little bit.
Doing, you're not zooming in on
no,
Danica
no, just,
right now.
Yeah,
zoom
okay,
in.
Right,
zoom
right,
in
right,
a little
right,
more.
Right.
Whoa! Right. Well, get her back on screen.
Okay,
this is ridiculous. This freaking...
Wait. There,
what?
Wait.
What?
Oh,
no
oh,
more.
Oh,
more.
Oh,
don't you do this.
Oops. There she is. So now Brian, Danica wants to stop by and let you know that GoDaddy has a new deal for the month of July. They have a special offer, a .com domain for just $4.95. $4.95 for a .com, Brian.
All I hear you saying is, I'm a jerk and I'm preventing Brian from looking at Danica.
And, well, look at my hair, though. Look at my hair, Brian.
I don't talk to you,
Brian. And the thing is, Brian, is if you use the code, now you got to use a special code, 495 Linux, when you check out, you'll get that deal. And I actually just got myself two new domains. Three, actually. I kind of went on a domain buy.
Are any of them dealing with Danica?
Yes.
Okay, I'm interested.
Okay.
Tell me more.
Okay, all right. So, And I want
to. You're lying to me.
This is wisdom.
I am totally going to sucker punch you.
This is wisdom. I think you could use this for software.
Lay the wisdom on me.
I have registered. Ready for this?
Ready.
3 custom domains to make things easier for people. Okay. And I'll tell you how they relate to Danica.
I've always said that custom domains make things easier for people.
JBLive.am, if you type that now into a Shoutcast-compatible client, will play our live 64-bit kilobit stream. And JBLive.fm will play the 128 kilobit stream, where you will hear ads on the Linux Action Show where we talk about Danica Patrick.
Boom! Boom! Yeah, that's right.
What's the third one?
I did it. Oh, jblive.info, where you'll be able to find links and live stream calendar and all that, but that's still under construction.
So many domains.
jblive.info is where you get calendar information and all that kind of stuff. This is all, over the last few episodes, I've been talking about a new radio station we're working on. I'll talk about it more in the feedback we're going to do at the end of the show.
Okay.
I got stuff we're working on.
You got stuff.
And so I needed domains to kind of make things a little more simple when you're on the go. You know, you think of a mobile device, you don't want to type in a long domain. So I thought, I'm going to get a domain to make things shorter for people. I think people can do the same thing because all these are is just DNS forwarders to wherever I want them to actually go to. So they're super easy to maintain. If you wanted to do that with a .com, heck, y'all just use our code 495Linux. Get yourself a .com for $4.95. You can do that for up to 3 domains, y'all. 3 domains. Plus, they'll give you a discount on the yearly.
I'm just going
to
say this straight up front. Everything you just told me now is irrelevant. But if you want to use one of those codes to register a domain, let's say this is just a picture of DanicaPatrick.com, and you go there and it's nothing but one picture of Danica Patrick, that seems worthwhile.
Actually,
I don't know about these radio stations, bull malarkey, but a picture of Danica Patrick, interesting
also,
and worthwhile.
Side note, sounds a lot easier than what I'm working on. I got to be honest with you.
Dude, you're making this way too hard on yourself.
I think what folks need to do is do what
Ryan
says.
I'll make you a deal.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do the this is just one picture of Danica Patrick that never changes.com.
Okay. All right.
And you go ahead and create this giant radio infrastructure.
Okay.
And let's, 2 months from now,
see
look back and see which one gets more traffic.
Also, which one, if you just put like one Google ad on there, which one makes more money? That's not a bad idea, because you never know, man. You never know. She might not be on the page one of these mornings, and if that were to happen, we would need a backup website to go to.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So thank you to GoDaddy for sponsoring this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. All right, Brian, you want me to get to my Android pick or what?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Because it's one that I was going to recommend.
So if you've got a website and you track it with that handy software that Google. If you want to track your website with software from that company called Google, like the Google Analytics software, guess what? Good news for you, my friend. They now have a mobile app for your Android device.
It's so nice. And it runs really well on the tablet.
Yep.
Because I do this for Lunduke.com.
Yeah.
And it even works with the real-time stuff.
That is my favorite new feature of Google Analytics is real-time.
I love it.
Yeah,
the
and that's really...
The real-time traffic is great. You can see what people are going to, where they came from.
Yeah.
And you can just... And it updates like every like half second. It's phenomenal.
So there you go. And of course, it's free because it just goes along with the Google Analytics service. And it doesn't feature a couple of like the more drilled down things you can do. But heck,
but
if
you're just on the go and want to see what's happening with your site, like why is my freaking blog running so slow? You can just pop this up and go, oh, that's why.
There
awesome.
There you go, right there.
I just got on the front page of Dig. Just
there
kidding. That's not, no, you're not going to
no, you're not
going to
get any traffic from that. No,
yeah.
Unfortunately. All right, B-Man. Well, we've got a desktop pick and a Linux distro pick. What do you say we do this here? You want to do the app pick or the
distro
pick?
Let's do the app pick. The app pick is more ridiculous.
Okay.
All right, the app pick, and I don't know how to say this. It could be said as A-S-E Prite. Or Osprite.
I think it's Osprite, right?
Osprite.
It almost looks like aspartame.
It's
aspartame, Brian.
It is the most awesome pixel art editor in the universe.
Oh, cool.
It is glorious. Now, don't mind the screenshots. The screenshots are from the Windows version, but the UI is exactly the same on all platforms. It has this cool, ridiculous, you know, very, very much... kind of a mixture between 8-bit and 16-bit styled UI, where the entire UI is custom on, and it looks the same on every platform. It's so great. And not only is it, you know, pixel art, but it handles pixel art palettes really well and pixel art animation.
Mm.
And it is so
animation.
Freaking
wow.
Nice.
Wow.
So I've been working in this thing for a while now, and it is just plain awesome. And it runs on every platform. Now, if you go to their website, you'll notice you go to the download section. Oh, look, Windows. Oh, look, Mac. Oh, look, source code. Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
Wait, but that's what you do now.
Well, no. But I provide a Linux binary. Like this is what I'm saying. Like, you know,
oh,
you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, they don't provide directly a Linux binary, but it runs great on Linux. Gotcha. If you go over to playdeb.net, you'll find a pre-built Debian file for it, which you can then convert to anything else. And there are, this is in some of the other repositories here.
Look at
and
that
there
cool
as well.
Game right there.
God, it's just great.
See that? Look at that 2D space trading combat.
We've covered that in the
back. I want to play that.
We talked about that a couple.
Maybe we should just skip
5 years ago.
Why don't we skip the show and just play that?
We could.
All right,
that'd be great. All right, so that's pretty fantastic if you like pixel art.
Yeah.
All right, so the distro of the day is not all that random.
Let's say I made this huge mistake, Brian, and I made my directory, my home folder partition.
And you did.
Way too small.
You totally did.
Porn. And so now I need to increase the size of that partition and move things around. What would be a tool, Brian? What would be a tool that I might use to do
well,
that?
Well, I could say that you would download a live distribution on a live CD, pop it in there, and call that Parted Magic. Now, Parted Magic, it was picked kind of for a particular reason here.
What? It's not random?
Now, and you've probably talked about this in the show a little bit over the last few weeks, but the guy behind Parted Magic, the main developer, is trying to make a living off of this amazing distribution he creates. Now, this distribution really is kind of a pulling together of a lot of great tools and putting together in a really slick way that makes repartitioning and all sorts of things and all sorts of tasks so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
both Chris and I have relied on this in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great tool.
Especially when you want to just kind of change things up without having to do a total reinstall and things like that.
Exactly.
Or just, you know, look at the partition layout on a hard drive you pop in and want to check out.
It's great. Yeah. It's great. Now, this guy's trying to make a living off of donations, basically just like I am, except he makes a really, really low goal where he pretty much just wants to make minimum wage. And apparently he's got, like, family and kids and such.
Wow.
I think.
Well, maybe you can make a little more than minimum
somewhere.
Wage.
Maybe that would be good if he can make a little more than minimum wage. Because I don't know if anyone else out there has tried to raise a family with a bunch of kids on minimum wage. But I'm guessing...
They're expensive.
Yeah, they cost a little bit of money. So if you go over to partedmagic.com, there's a little donate button on the page. The page isn't terribly well designed, but you can find all the stuff.
Wow. You didn't have to throw that last thing in there. I mean,
compliments,
but your website sucks. So.
This guy is awesome. This guy makes a great, great tool. The website does not need to be nice. I mean, let's be honest.
No,
this website
right.
could be just link to download, link to donate, and then a link to like a forum.
Look,
and
the other,
you could be done.
The other guy
and
in
ugly
his,
as sin. That'd be fun.
The other guy in his space is Steve Gibson, and let's not talk about GRC. C.com. Let's just not go there, okay?
Dude, this is Parted Magic is fantastic.
This
Parted
thing,
Magic
this thing
is
looks
the, is
like
the
a
way
castle
to
compared to GRC.com.
Dude,
a castle, Brian.
A castle. Freaking castle. Beautiful castle.
Well, there welcome
we
back,
so
D-Man.
Anyway, that's awesome.
How you been?
Tired. I'm just now getting over being sick. So,
yeah,
let's
got, like,
see.
You got like all kinds of cross country sick.
Before the last time I was on the show, I think I wasn't on the last episode the first time because I was sick.
Right.
And then I got this just raging sinus infection. And then I went on a cross country sick trip.
Drive.
To see two cousins get married.
Right.
Not, you know, to each other, but like. Different weddings.
You know, I never,
people,
but it's good you
but,
made that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just want to make that clear. They were, you know, yeah.
Otherwise, why?
So, but two different cousins getting two different weddings a week apart. So I went to one, it was in Montana, and it was beautiful. You know, we got to drive from here to Montana, which
I've
is, you know, takes 3.5 minutes.
Montana. Montana.
I would have liked to have seen Montana.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm trying to do in a Sean Connery voice because he did not say that.
I know.
That.
Well, I actually made the joke in the first time you were gone.
Hunt for Red
October's
a great movie.
I made the Montana joke and I did it in a Sean Connery voice.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's what I always did. Yeah, I did it probably 10 times while I was on the trip to Montana. So anyway, so I went there, and then I went to Utah to see another wedding, and then I came home. But it just over this course of, you know, went through Montana and Wyoming and Idaho and Utah, and I caught every freaking flu and cold I came across in five freaking states.
This is why I never travel.
Oh, man.
Not true.
So by the time I got home, I was just dying. The color that was coming out of my face was so... Kodachrome could not have captured this color.
Really?
Paul Simon had never envisioned the ability to capture this much color. If he had, he would have made a song about the stuff coming out of my
you
face.
You had like HDR snot?
Yes, I had HDR snot.
Wow.
It was absolutely phenomenal. It was a fun trip, but oh my God. So I'm just now on the up and up finally.
Jeez.
But holy moly.
Well, Matt did a great job, so thank you, Matt, for filling in while the B-Man was out. Matt ended up getting sick last week.
Did he really?
Yeah, he got like a stomach flu.
Poor guy.
But he managed to poop it all out and then join us for over Skype and then go back.
I'm glad he managed to squeeze that one out. Yeah, that's good for everybody. Yeah. Good for everybody involved. Yeah, yeah. Oh, before we kick off to the last little bit. So, one thing I wanted to quickly touch on.
No, never.
Yeah.
Who could have seen that coming?
One little thing. So for those of you who've been waiting, you can grab the source code for Illumination Software Creator, the current release version, if you go over to lunduke.com now. I just changed things over. I've been trying to figure out a best way to, you know, make a living off at donations.
Right, right.
And
with going with the open source of the code.
So I'm making all my open source available, and most of it's all up there now and all that good stuff. But I realized I did something terribly wrong.
Hmm.
I neglected to give any perk at all to people who donated. Basically, so all the people that have donated so far did so because they are just amazing people. They didn't get anything for it. Like, there was no benefit to them, right? So I'm like, oh, okay. So I kind of put the call out. I'm like, guys, I need a hand here because there was a little bit of drop off in donations, and I'm like, uh-oh, that's not good.
No.
So what am I doing wrong? And the feedback I got back from everyone was I need to provide perks.
Oh, I was going to say nudie pictures. Okay. All right. I was going a different track.
I actually did get recommendations along those lines.
Well, there you go.
So now there are some perks for people that that donate, including access to the binaries, which I don't give to the public anymore. But of course, everything's GPL'd. So if people want to post binaries on their own sites, they're free to. Put them in repositories, they're free to. They get a contributors post. So if you want to get a little advertising going, it's a good way to get some advertising going, and you get to vote on what I work on. So now people get perks for donating.
How are you going to do the voting thing? That seems like...
Oh, I'm building a whole system around it. So there's two steps. Check this out. So basically, one is this kind of light Reddit-y system where people get to vote on like a backlog of interesting features.
Well, you could just do a subreddit. But you would know they're donors.
No, it's something I need a little more control over. Yeah. And then the second step is a private vote. Little voting booth, a little voting booth software I'm putting on the site that I send the link out just to people that have donated in the past month. And then they get to vote on the top 10 or whatever features to work on. So then they get to have an actual say on what I work on because they donated, which actually seems kind of cool to me.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll see how well it works. But if you go over to lunduke.com and you want to support, you know, all sorts of awesome open source software and rub it in people's face who said that there's no way open source software can support people, which there's a lot of those people out there still yelling about that, that's a good way to do it.
There you go. There you have it. All right, B-Man. Well, let's do the news.
Okay. What's new in the news today?
All right, B-Man, the top story on the news docket today. Open Web OS is here.
It sure is.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting how they're doing this, too. This came out just a couple of days ago, and get ready for this. It's called the Community Edition, and the Community Edition is focused on supporting the touchpad. So they're trying to get new updates out there for touchpad owners.
Yep.
Now... Open Web OS 1.0, that release is planned for September. It includes modernized technologies to better enable the community to port Web OS to the hardware of their choice.
I love modernized technologies so much.
You do love the platform and hardware of your choice, Brian.
They do love both of those things.
Yeah.
And modernized technologies.
They're going to do things like a new Bluetooth stack. They're integrating, get ready for this, GStreamer. GStreamer.
I like that.
And all other kinds of things. So that'll be in September when the one that you can load on your own kind of tablet, you start shipping.
Choice. That's not far away.
So
that's not far away at all.
What is the chat room talking about?
I don't know what the chat room's talking about. But this actually looks pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to load this up on anything because I don't have a tablet.
No, I don't have
tablet. So
I never we've gone into that. I never got one.
I never got one.
I wanted to give a quick shout out. I have no idea what's going on with this. It hit the Linux Action Show subreddit and it was highly voted. This is a cross-platform Android router. Not router like as in router, but router as in
you hook your Android phone
up to a Windows, Mac, or Linux box, and it'll root it for you.
That's nice.
Now, it's got 84 days left. It's on this kind of like Kickstarter type service. They say they only raised $1. I don't know if that means they've got no shot, but their plan is for cross-platform. Super One Click is essentially going to be a Windows only feature, but they will be possible to run the other components on Mac and Linux. But just the one-click button, I guess, is only going to work on Windows. So they say the solution is the cross-platform Android Router project aims to create a cross-platform open-source Android routing solution to address these problems. So there you go. If you get in, you get perks, kind of like you do on Kickstarter, and it's only $1 to get in.
That's cool.
So, you know,
if that's interesting to you, go for it.
I'm a big fan of rooting an Android device because I hate the idea of having a computer and not having administrative access over it. That just seems crazy to me.
Crazy.
Speaking of computers that you won't have administrative access over, Brian, Android 4.1 was announced by the Googles this week.
And it changes everything!
Okay, all right. So did you happen to see what my reaction to the whole Google I.O. keynote was on Google Plus?
No.
Well, first of all, the whole parachuting thing that they did, the skydiving thing, then to the mountain bikes, then to the going down the side of the building
was
thing.
Was awesome. You're right. It was pretty amazing.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
All right. So that was really cool.
That was really cool.
Now, outside of that, what was the first thing they touched on in the keynote? Jelly Bean. And what was the first feature of Jelly Bean that they announced? Project Butter. Project Butter. Which they rolled some video demo of how slow ice cream sandwich is versus Jelly Bean using high-speed cameras. Now, every time I have come on this show and I said, I really like Android, but I just feel like the interface is leggy and it doesn't snap like the iPad does.
Yeah.
People give me grief. They go, oh, come on. That's just the way you're seeing it. That's probably the way the vendor shipped software on there. Blah, blah, yabbity, yabbity, yabbity.
Yeah.
But
now Google's like, oh, by the way, yeah, it is really laggy.
Right?
And we're finally fixing it and in version 4.1 and we're making a big deal about it, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it would have. Yeah, they probably should have addressed that a long time ago before the 27,000th complete rewrite of the interface, maybe. but yeah.
And I think it would have been awesome. Like, if they were going to make it faster, this would have been the perfect time to jump from the sugar meme to something healthier. Like Android celery. I don't know.
No, I like butter.
Android carrot stick. I don't know.
Butter.
But so that's good. That's good. So, of course, that's just my personal soapbox.
You know what they should have done? What? They should have jumped over to, like, cats.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this is Puma.
God.
Just for the hell of it.
No. So otherwise, though, Android Jelly Bean looks to be pretty sweet. One of the things that they have worked in there
well,
is...
Yeah, well, it's good because everybody is already running Ice Cream Sandwich and the entire world. And they're like, man, we just need an upgrade because we've been running Ice Cream Sandwich for so many years now.
I think Ice Cream Sandwich wasn't compelling enough of an upgrade.
Are you kidding? None of them are compelling upgrades. Like, it's... What's the real difference? What is the real functional...
I'd do it for the performance. And also, you know, they have some...
But every upgrade, you're like, oh, I need that for the performance. Every upgrade, every single upgrade Android has ever had has been, I need the performance.
True, that's
so
true.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're running, you know, gingerbread or honeycomb or ice cream sandwich. Oh, I need that for the performance. I mean, really?
Oh, well, there's other things. They've reworked the notification area. Chrome ships by default, and Chrome is a good browser in that thing. They've sort of overworked.
Yeah,
they've overworked like a lot of little. There's like little gesture things you can do now. The whole widget system's been redone, so there's been improvements.
I like that. It just feels too fast for me. Like, I'm like, slow down.
Well, you got to be happy.
Smell the flowers. Savor your ice cream sandwich. Get them on devices.
It's not 5.0. That's you know, nice. They went 4.1, right? They went 4.1. So
yeah.
It kind of spaced
out. I think they're just trying to catch up with iOS. Like, they want to be caught up number-wise with iOS. Got iOS 6 coming out.
Maybe.
They got to hurry those numbers up so they can get to Android 6 and then boom.
Play the Chrome and Firefox game.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Where they're in constant competition. Because what are we on? Firefox 27,000 now?
13 now.
13?
Yeah, and Chrome is like 1
million. Do you
remember
when we were doing this show just a couple years ago, Firefox 5 came out.
It just like it was a different game back then. Also, starting with Jelly Bean and really going down the road, Flash is being phased out on the Android platform completely.
Yeah.
So, boom. What do you think of that?
I think it's funny how it's being like... presented to people. They're like, it's not that you're not going to have access to Flash anymore. It's that you're going to be free from Flash now.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, wait a minute. But one of the big things with Android was you could have Flash if you wanted
it. Yeah.
And now it's like you're free from that. Yeah. You don't have to worry about that anymore. Yeah. I'm like, wait, what?
Right.
Wait a minute.
Remember how that was a feature?
Wasn't there going to be a thing where it was like, hey, Google was going to be taking over the development kind of stuff on the Linux side of things, and like they were helping out with the Android side of things as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought it was like a big deal. And now it's like, oh, so
it's
that's
funny because you remember the Droid commercials were about like the Droid in the commercial would talk about how it can run Flash.
Yeah, it was like a big friggin' deal.
Yeah.
And that was just like a year ago.
It's just funny how Adobe never managed to deliver.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't get what Adobe...
I mean, it's not like I'm the hugest Flash guy in the world. I just think it's strange.
I just don't get Adobe. Like, Adobe just does things that... Like, they just don't do things that seem so obvious to everyone else. They just get locked in with this almost Apple-like mentality about things, and they just keep going until it's way too far. Like... They never ever got Flash quite right on Android.
No, they never did.
And I don't know.
It kind of sort of worked.
Yeah, but they just didn't want to give up their market share.
Yeah.
One last Google thing from the I/O, because we're going to talk a lot about the Google I/O stuff and how it relates to developers in Coder Radio. We're not, you know, this is the Linux Action Show. This stuff doesn't directly apply to Linux, except for this story does. This is interesting. Is Google introducing a compute engine, which is a scale system where you can say, I want these many Linux boxes or I want this many Linux boxes, and you can up and down in the amount of cores you want. Google actually demonstrated a genetic application running on 600,000 cores on a Linux system.
That's insane.
They say that you can do all kinds of things that you would bring it. So basically, you get on here, you'd bring a job and have it compute out, and there you go. So think about think about colleges that would, in the past,
have to build up an entire cluster to manage to do this, and now they can just basically outsource it to Google.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's a smart move on Google's part.
Microsoft offers something kind of similar to this, so does Amazon, but both...
Yeah, but what I think the big difference between what Google's doing is they're trying to make it easy to scale it to multiple hundred thousand cores.
Yeah, and you really just hand it over to their system and they...
Right, run this piece of software to compute this project. Whereas, if you go through Amazon or Azure over with Microsoft, you're really saying, I want to be able to scale out an appliance for hosting and data processing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little different.
Yeah. Interesting. So interesting move by the Google, and cool to see them using Linux on that. That means more stuff will be written targeted towards Linux for those types of applications.
It's very cool.
All right, B-Man, next story on the news doc. It's really been put in here to give a shout-out to a company both you and I like. That's Fluendo and their awesome codec pack.
I love that stuff.
We've been using them for years, and they've just released a new version. And the reason why I wanted to give this new version a shout-out is it improves some live streaming support, but it also uses your GPU more efficiently for digital video decoding.
I need to download this.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So you get some GPU management, and you get better H.264 support. You also get support for lossless AAC, so if you have somebody that's giving you music and like that Apple, what's that Apple? They've got some lossless format.
Yeah.
And RTP streams as well. So the Jupiter Broadcasting live stream now is supported by the Fluendo codec pack.
Awesome.
Our experience with them has been great, and if you want to legally watch all of these proprietary formats that you have to go get those shady codecs for, either through your repo or through some sort of script or something, you can go buy this bundle, and it's super easy to install. It integrates in with GStreamer, and then you just have the codecs available to anything that uses GStreamer. There's other ways to do it for other applications.
It's great.
And it's legal.
Yeah,
And you know what I do is I keep a zip version of it in my Dropbox, and anytime I load up a new Linux machine,
I
just extract it and throw it in.
I have it in a little, it's sitting on my home server at home. I just go fetch it, grab it, throw it on whatever machine I'm on. It's super easy.
The chat
runs so much faster than a lot of the various other ones.
L Mr. Mango in the chat room is asking for the price. I want to say
it's not much.
It was like under $20.
I want to say like $25, something like that.
I'll go over to see if this.
We're gonna click it. We're gonna figure this out live for you guys.
You know, it's
right
funny.
Now.
I just had a flashback. We actually did this last time on the air when they had a new one.
€28.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
So there's an answer for you for people who spend euros.
So I think that means it's like so
I don't know.
Probably around $30.
It's like $30 ish. It's well worth it if you play media.
And you want That's really high quality stuff. And if you do DVD playback and you really want so here's the little dirty thing to all of these codecs that are in the repos, like the bad plugins and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They're not always the highest quality software.
No.
That's the thing people don't realize. So sometimes your video actually won't look as good as it could if the decoding software isn't very intelligent about it.
It's true. It is kind of interesting. A lot of people who have never tried getting like the Fluendo codecs or anything else, they don't realize how good the picture can actually look on some of the higher definition video files they've got. So it's worth it if you care about the video. If you don't care all that much about the video quality, or you're not too worried about maybe the area, the country you're in having some licensing issues, then it's not that big a deal. But I love them. I swear by those things.
Too bad they don't advertise, because boy, we could give them a good plug. All right, B-Man.
Good.
We'll just spend a little bit of time on this. We won't spend too much time, but Frolix ran an article that was a repost of the blog from one of the dolphin maintainers, or the dolphin maintainer, and he essentially, in his blog post, made the assertion that perhaps KDE was no longer competitive with modern desktops, aka Windows 7, Mac OS 10, Lion, Snow Leopard, and Android, and all those things. And he is.
Does Android qualify as a modern desktop?
I just wanted to name a.
You just wanted to put one out there.
And I thought, what's
you were doing great. And DOS and
OS 2 Warp.
The OS 2 Warp presentation manager. That's good stuff. The Amiga Workbench. Boom. Yeah.
So Robin J in the JB Live chat room says he's right. So chat room says XFCE, LXDE, E17, GNOME 2, KDE is awesome. There's love. What do you think, B-Man? Is KDE, and let's be honest, Okay. All right. You're shaking your head like, no, it's perfectly fine.
It's great.
Then why aren't you running it?
Well, I am on one machine. Not as my main machine, though.
That's what
But I'm also not running Unity or GNOME Shell as my main machines.
I know.
I'm also not running Windows Explorer or the Mac OS 10 Jelly Bean of Doom UI.
Are you not running KDE for the same reason you're not running Unity?
Yeah.
What is that reason?
Because I want to run Xmonad.
Why?
Because it is awesome. Super crazy lightweight, old school, and I like the tiling multi kind of desktop window manager thing that it's got. It's a different paradigm for how I work. So, I mean, I'm not the right guy to ask, because I'm not the average kid on the street who's going to look at a desktop and go, oh, that's fancy, I want to use it.
This is the fallacy that all people are under around the Linux scene. Nobody running Linux, the majority of people running Linux are not the average user.
Well, that's it.
We got a story about average users coming up, but like, we all are high-end users that are on Linux for the majority.
Yeah, and I'm the wrong guy to ask if... I mean, because honestly, when I look at KDE, 4.8 and 4.9...
What I'm saying is, I don't think you are the wrong guy to ask. I think you're exactly the overall larger target audience for the Linux desktop. And what it is these desktops are being written for the new mythical user that's never seen a computer before and never used an operating system, is all of a sudden going to pop out of nowhere and sit down and use a desktop operating system.
So this particular developer, he's the developer of Dolphin, right?
Yeah.
So he's the Dolphin file manager developer, which Dolphin's a great file manager. They've done some really cool stuff with it. So from what I gathered, he just is tired of using KDE because he doesn't like the user experience anymore.
Yeah, and
it's not the technology,
right.
It's
and
not the look and
like,
feel.
Well,
he doesn't like the workflow anymore.
He feels like there's a disconnect between really, really complex back ends, like he goes on to talk about KHTML and the rendering engine of web browsers, and then how the pressure on the simpler, more elegant interface to sit on top of that, and how he doesn't think KDE is quite meeting that goal. And in order for that to be met, it needs more people working more full-time on it, and he's not able to do that. That's one of the reasons he's stepping aside.
Honestly, KDE could use more people working more full-time on it. I mean, it's hard to build something that huge and that complex with a crew of ragtag, very, very part-time, weekend, non-paid warriors, which is mostly what we have.
I think KDE is competitive.
It is hard.
In the sense that it fills a very good spot for people who are transitioning from Windows. And I don't mean to say, oh, KDE is a Windows knockoff, but I think if you're coming from Windows XP, Windows 7, there are more things that translate to KDE that you can kind of go, you can map familiarities to.
Yeah, typically the button sits in the lower left-hand corner. You click it, and you have a structured menu to launch your applications. Like, it does.
Whereas
it has
Unity, like, Unity is very, like, there's just a few
different
things. Like, everything's super crazy maximized, and your menus get lost, and your close buttons are on the wrong side, and there's all these little different things. So I think KDE is still very relevant in that stance. And the other fact of the matter about KDE is you can customize it to just about anything you want.
No, I gotta ask. I thought you were all like Mr. KDE.
I have eventually, this is the problem, is I have moved it over to one machine. And that's kind of where it's ended up sitting.
It just stays there? You see, I'm honestly,
I
have KDE on one machine and I keep up to date and I test my apps against the latest revision of KDE and I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I really like KDE, though. Like, KDE is a fantastic desktop environment and a supporting set of technologies. They do an amazing job, and I really, really like it. And what I'm excited about with KDE is I think it translates very well with the work they're doing to tablets and everything else.
Yeah.
And that's, I think KDE is great that way. I don't really have anything bad to say about KDE. Developers who work on a project for more than a couple of years are going to get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had been developing Dolphin as a file manager for that many years, I would stand up and say, "No more Dolphin! I hate this thing! I'm done!" And I would just walk off and I'd start using Gnome or XMonad or something else.
It's
just because you need a change of pace. So I don't really blame this guy.
No, and it's just frustrating.
Totally,
it's frustrating if you know you need to be able to do more and you can't dedicate that time to it. So it's a weird thing. It's a weird spot
totally
to be.
It totally is.
So,
it totally is. But sometimes you need a change of pace. And honestly, it sounded like this guy was like, "You know what? Things aren't perfect. I need a change of pace." But things aren't perfect anywhere with any piece of software.
True that.
So who cares? I mean, it's nice. People who like KDE use KDE. It's great. This isn't really a knock against KDE.
I agree. Why don't we talk about, remember how I said there's not these mythical users that just pop out of nowhere that have never used a computer before and all of a sudden are using Linux?
Yeah.
Well, except for in India, where Ubuntu adoption has grew 160% in the last year.
Yeah.
Canonical says they're seeing tremendous opportunity in India.
Awesome.
And this makes sense. Now, because of the price, because of the different, just the cost of Ubuntu alone, which is free, and then them partnering with a company like Canonical, and Canonical partnering with a hardware vendor, and then be able to come down there and say, "Okay, we'll give you the support, we'll give you the software, and here's a hardware vendor we've handpicked. They'll work with you too."
It's great.
They've seen a ton of success with this approach. So, I mean, 160% from what? I don't know, but I still think it's really awesome. And I just wanted to throw that story in there since I did just get on my high horse about how it does kind of frustrate me that we keep building these desktops toward these new users who don't really seem like they exist in our world, but they are actually out there.
They totally exist.
They are in the
They totally exist.
All right, B-Man, this one is a riveting story. I just want to give it a quick plug.
I love this story.
Fedora is considering for the next version to up it from Turbo LibJPEG to including 256 colors on the command line.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think? What do you think, B-Man?
I don't really care.
Now, this, of course, was debated during the OpenStack meeting that they had, where they were trying to really discuss the best direction to take this. And, of course, the members agreed that while they couldn't come to some sort of arrangement they all agreed upon for this very controversial topic, they will revisit the matter and have another debate on the mailing list.
Now, there are already terminals that you can get that have much larger color palettes, and there are ways within non-256 color enabled Xterms to run applications inside the terminal that use many more colors than that. It's just a matter of making the terminal itself 256 color. And it kind of, like, really, I mean, have you ever sat around and thought, "Man, if only I had a few more colors"? I mean, it's just, it doesn't happen all that much. But I think it's totally fine. Yeah. I have no issue with it. There's nothing wrong with it. So macOS 10 did it in the last release.
Yeah.
They basically just revved up to the latest
version. Was it revolutionary?
I don't even think they mentioned it.
And now we've revolutionized the terminal by enabling 256 colors.
I mean, they just grabbed it from FreeBSD. I mean, FreeBSD had it, and so they grabbed it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if Apple engineers knew that they grabbed it.
Like, "Oh, crap, did you..."
I mean, because you can't tell by just looking at it. You'd have to actually run software at specific... Anyway, so it kind of seems like the Fedora people are like, "Oh, macOS 10 can do more colors in the terminal than we can?
We better keep up.
I mean, luckily, macOS 10 didn't come up with, like, accelerated animated GIF support or something like that. Because then,
whoa.
But who cares? It's fine. I mean, why not?
Speaking
more is better, right?
Speaking of distributions that believe in the more is better in terms of version numbers, we talked about them before, and the outlook was a little foggy, but things have turned around, B-Man, because I've got good news. A new version of Slackware is in development. Version 14.0 is underway, and I just wanted to include this in here because we did talk about at one point that the Slackware project, their website was down.
Yeah.
They're having a hard time. Remember, the developer was like,
So what if the website's down? The FTP site's up? Well, what's the big deal?
It's freaking Slackware. I mean, come on. This isn't like Nike. They're not selling, like, consumer-level shoes here. It's freaking Slackware. The only ways you're going to get it are from the repositories, from the source code repository or FTP site. Because it's freaking Slackware.
And giving KDE a huge vote of confidence, Slackware has announced that they will be shipping KDE 4.84 in version 14 of Slackware, as well as Linux kernel 3.2.21. And don't forget, you're also going to get yourself GCC 4.7.1 and Python 2.7.3.
Here's the only problem I have. So Slackware, their last release was Leet.
Yes.
1.3.3.7.
Yes. Right.
The new release is going to be 14.0. I feel like there's got to be a better, more awesome hacker speak number that they could have used. I feel like it doesn't even matter if the number is bigger or smaller. I feel like they just have to come up with a really cool one.
How did you spell boobs on the calculator?
It's 80085.
That's what their next version number should be.
Oh, that would be epic.
I know, right?
You know what? If I come out... Dude, that's what I'm doing. So that's totally what I'm doing. So I'm putting out my own little distro. It's not for consumer people.
Oh, here we go. This is hold on. This didn't make the distro round.
No. Well, this is I don't need people using this. So I'm just putting this little distro up on SUSE Studio and SUSE Gallery to make it easier for people who want to build my software, so who want to work with me on it and that sort of thing. And so cool. I should totally do that. I should make the version number boobs. And just make it always boobs.1.
There you go. Speaking of SUSE,
boobs.3.
I think we got to do our review next week because the Monday or Tuesday after
when it gets
that,
really good, boobs.
Nice, dude. Nice. Yeah. Next Sunday, I think, is going to need to be the big show's review of the new OpenSUSE because it comes out like the Monday or Tuesday after that.
Yeah.
So we'll grab like the latest snapshot of the stable.
The almost pretty much essentially final.
We'll give it a go and see where we stand. So tune in next week on the Linux Action Show
that'd be epic.
All right, B-Man.
Epic.
So we're going to talk about the Raspberry Pi.
We got the Pi. Here's a box for the Pi and here's the Pi itself, which is semi-transparent. You can kind of see clouds behind it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is.
Because it's a green screen.
That is pretty
cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's all the news.
I don't want any more news. I hate news right now.
Oh, for this week?
Me and news.
Done.
Angry. Mad at the news.
Brian's back this week, and he came with a new toy, his Raspberry Pi. Of course, everybody knows what the Raspberry Pi is, this tiny little Linux computer that is smaller than a deck of cards.
Smaller.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's got Ethernet on it. It's got two USB ports, HDMI, and then it's got a RCA video out.
RCA video.
And then a mini audio jack out.
Yep.
And then on the bottom of this thing, the SD card reader.
Yeah.
Which is very well hidden. It's very well hidden.
It's fantastic. It's a fantastic little rig. I mean, people have been freaking about this for a while because it's friggin' like $35 for an ARM-based desktop computer.
Now, it's green, so it keys out on our green screen if you're watching the video version, but you can still get the relative size of it. So you haven't had a ton of time to play with it, but you've got a chance to kick our tires a little bit, right?
I've had a little bit of time to play with it. I threw Debian Squeeze on here to kind of get a gauge for general performance, and I managed to throw a few key applications on here to see how things went.
Yeah.
And I love this little rig.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to take this from the top.
Okay.
First of all, I ran a little contest about a month back.
Yeah.
Build something cool and win some Pi. So I actually have two of these guys, and I'm going to give one away to the winner of that contest in the next week or so. But this one is mine, and I'm not letting anyone touch it because it's mine, and I love this one. But seriously, for $35, it is an amazing deal. Honestly, for more than $35, I don't know that it's that good a deal.
Really?
So now here's the thing with this guy.
Whoa, really?
It is very, very fast for running one thing at a time. But what you're looking at here is really a machine that you can't expand the memory of. You have a set amount of RAM.
True.
And it's not much. And when you're talking about multitasking, let's say open up a web browser with a whole slew of tabs, you've seen how slow a 2 gig of RAM system can get when you open up a Chromium with more than 5 or 6 tabs.
Sure.
Same issue on this little guy. You're going to bog your system down. But if you want a great little set-top box for your TV... or you want a machine that's really great at running one, maybe two things at a time, this thing is stellarly good. And you may ask yourself, well, what is that good for? So I've been doing a little brainstorming, and I played around with the performance of different applications. And here's kind of what I've come to. Throwing the default stock Debian Squeeze, which ships with LXDE, which is, you know, it's very lightweight. I think Midori web browser ships with it by default, which is a great lightweight choice. It all works pretty well. It's like using an old netbook. It's like using the old, like, Triple E PCs, the original ones that shipped. It's not terribly fast, but it's fast enough for compute day-to-day computing purposes if you could.
And I recall, didn't they put, isn't there a chip on there that's supposed to make HD playback a little more slick?
So I didn't try it with full 1080p, but I tried it with 720, and there was no issues whatsoever.
Nice.
So I was able to play back 720 XVIDs with no problem at all, and it ran incredibly, incredibly well. So,
and of course, silent, which is a neat little
dead silent.
I mean,
but there's
even
no fan.
It's on, right?
There's no fan. There's no moving parts. There's nothing on this.
Yeah.
So I plugged this into my TV through the little HDMI port. Plugged it into the TV. Plugged USB and mouse into it. It's powered via the little micro USB on the side.
Oh, okay. I was wondering.
So it's a little micro USB. Now, it didn't ship with. I got mine from Element 14 out of Great Britain, and there's one of the two manufacturers
right,
of it.
Right.
And it did not come with a power adapter. Now, I think you can pay more and they'll give you one, but I already have so many things.
Like your gadgets.
My little Nokia N900 already had a micro USB, so I already used that for charging. So I just tried that out. It worked just fine.
Yeah, I like that.
Now, so I plugged this into my TV.
Wow, that really tells you the scale of this thing, that it can run off of a micro USB power source.
Yeah, quite well. So I plugged it into my TV, loaded up Debian Squeeze on it, and it boots pretty fast. I mean, it's not exactly like, oh my gosh, 5 seconds and it's loaded. It takes a little while. But
yeah, we have a video here. I was watching this guy's video of it, and it's
does not take like 10 minutes or anything to boot, but it boots up pretty fast. Fast enough. And let's be honest, like, if you're building this as a set-top box or anywhere you go, you don't need it to boot in 10 minutes. It's in 10 seconds. You know, a minute is just fine. And really, it takes less
look
than that.
Look at this. Shane Kufel in the chat room says, and Shane, by the way, is the guy that does our Jupyter Broadcasting app in the Android market. He says, it works great on my 40-inch TV, 1080p. I actually watched the live stream on it through the XBMC Jupyter Broadcasting app.
See? This is what I'm talking about.
Now,
granted, if he tried to do that while at the same time, say, loading up Eclipse and 12 tabs in Firefox, you're going to die a slow death. But one thing at a time, it's going to handle it fine. It's going to be able to accelerate the video just fine. It has enough juice to do anything you need there just fine. I also loaded up a lot of emulators on this.
Oh, cool.
I threw DOSBox on here, a couple of console emulators that I had legal ROMs for. And so I got the little USB ports.
Yeah.
Plugged in my Xbox 360 controllers.
No.
Plugged this into the HDMI into the TV.
I guess, they're just relying on the support in Linux.
And there's support in Linux, and it works just fine. A little bit of configuration for the keys.
Yeah.
Sat back, butter smooth emulation.
Oh, butter smooth,
I mean, butter smooth, just like an
Butter
Android.
Style,
yeah,
huh?
Project Butter style, yeah. of great old games. So here's the cool part. And I was able to load this all on a little 8-gig SD card that I just shoved in there. I just had one that you can... I mean, come on. You can pick up an 8-gig SD card
for
$10.
Seriously.
So I shoved that in there. And an 8-gig SD card maybe not going to fit your entire video collection, but you can fit a lot of video games on there.
Well, you got an Ethernet port on that thing. If you got your video on your
Ethernet port
home server.
That's what I did. So I loaded that up, pointed it over to my server.
Nice.
Done. And it worked remarkably well. Now, again, that's just one thing at a time, though. As soon as I tried to do more than, two or three things at once,
really
especially if it's intensive, do you feel it.
Do you feel like that was all memory restriction?
I think it was memory restriction, yeah.
So if came out with a newer model that had,
But really, I mean, it is not, a quad-core 2 gigahertz, processor in here. It's an ARM chip. And it kind of made me start thinking about my older N900 phone.
Right, right.
Because, I mean, really, we're looking at something kind of similar in a way. A nice ARM chip, a decent amount of RAM for the size and what it is. And really, we're looking at similar size. I mean, in fact, the Raspberry Pi is a little bit smaller than my Nokia N900 phone.
Isn't that crazy?
And has more power than it, to be sure. I mean, this is capable of running a lot more and crunching a lot more numbers. Now, once you put a case on this, you're going to have to build it yourself if you want one. You're going to start looking at it. It'll be a little bit bigger than this, which brings me to the next topic I want to talk about.
Cases for this thing, huh?
Cases. Flop me over here. And this is what I've decided I'm going to do. I'm going to go the Lego case
route.
That
sounds really weird to the audio listeners who have no idea. I just changed it, your computer screen.
It changed my computer
screen. Flop me over here. And they're
flop me over here.
You know, they don't know what you're talking about.
They don't know what. Yeah. Well, they should be watching the video version so they can get all this. So here's one of the Lego cases. Let me see if I can scroll up so you can see all of this. So you can see here, basically, people are just like, you know what? Let's build a case that fits this machine out of pure Legos.
That's just
and a
crazy.
Lot of people are doing this. And here's instructions on how to build this case complete with. And I'll scroll all the way
down
here.
By the way, on the Raspberry Pi site.
On the Raspberry Pi website.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a little Raspberry Pi logo that sits on top of it, all in Legos. And here's another one, let me see if I can zoom in here a little bit here, that looks a little bit more hardcore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you can get a lot of these. And honestly, a Lego case is kind of a nice way to go.
It's funny how much more that looks like a regular computer to me.
Now, if you look at the shot, you think, oh, that looks kind of big and bulky. But then think about it here. We're talking about like this.
Yeah.
So you're really only talking of a machine that's a couple of inches wide, basically at most about 6 inches by about 2.5 inches tall.
Maybe 3,
it's not too bad. It's you're talking really, really small. And the nice part about this is this thing just does not get hot.
Right.
And it doesn't need a fan.
Right.
So throwing it in a Lego case,
no
big friggin' deal. You're not going to have to worry about the plastic melting all
over
your desk.
It's like my 286 and 386 where I didn't even have to have a fan.
Yeah. Now, a lot of you are like, oh man, I wish I could get one of these for $35 and use some of my old Lego parts from when I was a kid, but I don't have them anymore because my wife made me get rid of them all and I'm very, very sad about that. Go down to your Lego store. They have walls of Legos.
Yeah.
They have parts here for people that have already figured out how to do this and put instructions on for the case they built. If you want to just clone one of those, get the part list. Go to the Lego store, spend $5 to $10 and get your Lego parts. Or there's lots of Lego designing applications out there that let you design the case. So you could put in the build the case visually in 3D, and then it'll give you a list of Lego parts, print it out, go to the store, a couple of bucks. So that's what I'm going to be doing with this guy. And then what I'll have is, and I'll put an 8 or 16 gig SD card here in the final thing. And then what I'll have is a great gaming rig.
Now check this out.
A great
little emulator rig. Check out this link from the chat room there from Geek. This is a pre-built case. It comes, this one's red, but I would assume they'd have other colors too. This actually looks kind of slick.
It looks super slick. And it's... So there's lots and lots of options out there.
There's going to be a whole cases market for this.
There's going to be a cases market for this. There totally is. And kind of what I was thinking about this, and I'm like, well, where do you use this? I mean, where does this really come in handy? And realistically, honestly, everywhere. So at the price, I don't see a reason to limit yourself to just one.
Right.
So here's what I started deciding what I like this. So currently, my home TV is either my Xbox or my PlayStation, right?
Okay. I have a boxy box.
You have a boxy box. But, you know, I'm like, well, you know, I have these game consoles anyway that I've had for a long time now. I might as well use them to play my digital content and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But really, it's overkill. They're loud.
Yeah.
They suck a ton of power. They're not customizable.
Right.
A lot of times they don't support weird codecs. They don't play OGG files.
The vendors keep updating them in a way that make them actually in some ways less and less usable as...
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, I'm a classic gamer, right? So I like to play weird OGG files, those crazy OGG files that no one's ever heard of.
What?
I like to play classic games. I like to do all these things. I'm like, well, and honestly, I like to be able to do maybe a little web browsing, check my email.
Yeah. A little porn.
Here's something to throw at you. Get one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Put some Legos around it, or hell, stick it in a static bag with some cables going into it. I know it's ridiculous, but why not?
Okay.
Stick it behind your TV. It's so small, you can mount this anywhere. No one's ever going to see it.
Yeah.
Now, you got two USB ports coming out of it. There's no wireless by default, so you're going to have to get some Ethernet to it, or you need one of those little USB to wireless dongles, which there's lots of. The problem is you've only got two USB ports without using a hub.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to try and be a little creative about it. But let's say you want to hook this up to your TV. Some interesting options to go here.
All right.
You know those little wireless, super tiny remote keyboards?
Yeah, yeah.
With the little trackpads on it?
Yeah, yeah.
They have a little dongle you stick right in there. Uh-huh. They have about a 15-foot range on there.
That'd be great.
Perfect. Stick that behind the TV. Mm-hmm. Plug in. You can do the same thing with controllers. Stick in a little Xbox 360 controller, which mm-hmm. you don't need to buy an Xbox for, just because the 360 controller is just a good controller with a long cable. Go grab it. Plug it in. You now have a nice keyboard.
Yeah.
And a nice game controller for playing classic games, doing web browsing, doing whatever you want on your home TV.
You know, and
the thing is, though, you're going to end up spending significantly more on peripherals than you would on the machine and the case
itself.
It's
true, the peripherals cost more. You know, way more. You could almost make a business out of this. Here's a case. We mount it to the back of your TV.
Yeah.
Run these cords to it, and it's an entertainment system. And, you know, like my TV, both my upstairs and downstairs TV have a USB port on them for, like, updates.
Yeah.
So you could probably pull the power from that USB port into this thing.
Yeah.
And then you just...
You know. By the way, you can. So I pulled power off of one of my laptops, I'm going to be honest, off of my Triple E that runs my BBS. I pulled a USB off of that because I have a little USB to micro USB, powered this baby just fine.
Nice.
Now, I don't know how well that would go once I started adding peripherals to this that also need power. That might be too much for it. I might have to get an actual jack.
This site is, you go there and you add these and they do 3D printing for these cases. Look at this case. This is like some sort of industrial strength pipe. Oh, it's plastic when you...
Yeah, but come on.
Still, though. I mean, this whole site has a whole list of them.
Yep. There's tons of Raspberry Pi case designs out there. I've seen people building wooden cases, which, honestly, the idea of having like a hand-whittled wooden case is glorious.
Look how good that looks. Look. So
and
this...
small as hell. On the screen there, it's significantly bigger than it would be in real life. Yeah. That's the crazy thing to me. And, yes, this guy is not terribly powerful.
No.
It really isn't.
But it's Rev 1. I mean, eventually, you know, the thing is about the mass production of Android phones and stuff is these quad-core processors are going to come to these cheaper devices.
Right now, this really doesn't need to be any more powerful.
No.
So I started thinking about that. There's one use of this guy that I am going to be using this for. So this is going to replace my TV. This one right here is going to be my new TV box. Well, what if you're the kind of guy that, you know, comes home and then he goes to work in the morning, he goes sits down at his desk? Well, typically, people bring along their tablets, their laptops, etc. They can bring their music collections with them.
Yeah.
That would be stellar on one of these. This would rock to be able to have a full desktop environment that you can go to work with.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing.
So it's bring your desktop with you, kind of?
It's bring your full desktop with you. You don't have to worry about making sure you erase your browser history.
No.
You don't have to worry about making sure your music is on the corporate desktops.
When I've
just
had a
put
work,
it on here.
When I've had a work laptop. You know, what do I always do with that work laptop? I bring it into my desk. I sit down. If it's got a docking station or if it doesn't, I hook up the monitor and the keyboard. And I got an external mouse and keyboard whenever.
You do that anyway.
Yeah.
You do that anyway.
Yeah.
So why not make it super, super small? Get one of those tiny little mice. You know, those little laptop mice are crazy tiny. It travels like crazy small. Use a keyboard that you already have at work or bring another one in and just sit down, plug it in, stick it into a monitor with the HDMI cable, which most modern monitors
this set,
have.
Right here. This set is a mouse and keyboard set that use one micro USB dongle.
Perfect. One micro wireless USB dongle. You're still one more dongle free and you're good to go. Now, if you have a monitor that doesn't have an HDMI port, getting an HDMI to DVI cable is not that bad. You can go over to a bunch of different websites and get a little cable to handle that just
there
fine.
You go.
So really, I haven't found a lot this couldn't do. Now, I tried to use this to compile some of my software. Worked just fine. If I tried to do that while I was, say, browsing three different tabs on the website, I would have cried and just immediately thrown this out a window. But as long as I know the limitations, it's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, here's another thing I was thinking of.
Make it job-specific, you're all right.
Make it job-specific, you're totally fine. This also works great for an installation piece. So if you have an office and you want to put running demos up, you mount this to the back of a monitor, a flat screen, put the flat screen up, and don't have cables going anywhere, and you can just run whatever you want off of it. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So honestly, I think this is fantastic. I've been thinking about this kind of long and hard about what I would
change
about
this. Could
make
a really cool little file server, too.
Super.
You know, you had attached to like a Drobo or a FreeNAS or some sort of external NAS attached storage.
Stick it in the USB port.
USB is only so fast, but if that's okay for you, that's...
Well, come on. USB is probably plenty fast, unless you're doing lots of video editing work.
Yeah.
I mean, or unless you're moving around, you know, 80 gig files.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be plenty fast.
Hell, go crazy. Go iSCSI and just do it over the Ethernet. What's up? Go crazy.
Dude, you could.
You could.
You totally could. Mm-hmm. So It really is pretty fast. It really is pretty great. And, you know, this got me thinking, those are all great, legit uses of this.
Sure, sure.
What about the other uses of this?
What are we going to do?
So I started thinking.
Prank somebody with a Raspberry Pi somehow? You got a prank or what?
You can get really great batteries out there that you can have little micro USB things.
Yep.
The idea is to, you know, to charge your cell phone on the go.
Yep.
So you can have little tiny battery packs to power this on the go. You get little wireless dongles. So you could have in a very, very small pack a very powerful little Linux device.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful with Ethernet, with Wi-Fi.
War driving, you thinking?
I'm thinking more than war driving. Okay. I'm thinking stuff. I mean, we're talking like mount this to a remote controlled car, stream back the video off of it, and then war drive off of that.
That would be pretty wild.
I mean the uses for this guy are almost unlimited because it's so small, so low powered.
Light. I mean, you've heard like the guys at Pirate Bay talking about taking things like this and strapping in the drones and then putting them up in the air.
Exactly. Or go to the sharper image and get those little four blade drones. This is so light, guys. It's only a couple of ounces.
Yeah.
You stick that on there, that thing's gonna fly just fine as long as you don't stick it like on the edge or something.
Yeah.
And why not?
Yeah.
Why the frig not? And for $35
USB webcam on that thing and then
$35 for the Ethernet version. Well, get the non-Ethernet version if you're already flying this in the air. You're probably not going to use Ethernet for $25. So just save yourself $10 that you can put towards, I don't know, a bunch of cool Lego parts.
That's funny.
It's just so cool.
Sharon's like, here, what about something like this? You could do something like this. They got a link to this.
That's the thing.
Like
there's
this Philips
so many
device.
Ideas.
Yeah.
So many ideas. And that's what I like about this. It puts the fun back in it, you know? Like, it puts the fun into tinkering around with having a computer again.
Yeah.
Because so many times now, we buy a Lenovo laptop, and we're done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, System 76 makes great desktops, but you buy it from them, and you're done.
They're mature now.
They're mature.
They're not like back in the day where you had to, like, assemble parts,
But this.
Dude, computers used to have a turbo button on them.
I miss my turbo button.
It's just crazy.
You could put a turbo button on this. It doesn't have to do anything.
This is going to be an interesting thing to watch because while it's got a set processor now, you got to figure these parts are going to get a lot cheaper and a lot cheaper.
I mean, this is a great upgrade over time. And the schematics are free for people to do stuff
this
with.
This is a great playing field for Linux to get its ARM support really dialed in. Not that it's not already great.
And if you look down here, you can see all the LED buttons. You can't really see it too well on the screenshot. Let me see. I have a... Here we go. If you switch over to my screen here, Chris, you can see basically the little schematics here. And up here you have the LEDs. And the LEDs, you know, show your power as an okay light because things are okay. You know, your whether or not you have Ethernet link and all that good stuff. There you go. But what's really, really cool about all this is you've got GPIO pins. So if you want to do some really cool stuff, you can. You have a lot of flexibility here. I mean, in a way, it's kind of like having an incredibly souped-up Arduino board because you can program a lot of stuff with this. I mean, if you're willing to get down and dirty, you can go crazy. Or, hell, interface this with another Arduino board, with an actual Arduino board, and do stuff with it. So it's,
and control it.
and control it from, I mean, which would be ridiculous and redundant. But super, super cool. I really can't say enough good stuff about it. However, do not buy it if you're thinking, this is my desktop now.
Yeah.
You will be so disappointed. If you're thinking, I want this to replace my TV, my game console, my music player box. I mean, seriously,
I know what I'm going to use one for.
You can get little tiny HDMI displays. You can get them.
Yeah.
Little tiny ones. You can even get HDMI touchscreens that take a USB. So get a little tiny one, HDMI, USB, have this play your video or your audio for your whole house.
Yeah,
it becomes your audio stereo system.
Exactly.
What are you going to use it for?
Well, I need a device, and I actually have a little Atom board I was thinking about using, but I need to send audio around between my office studio and this studio, and I use a Shoutcast stream.
There you go.
And or an IceCast stream, actually. And this would be a perfect little IceCast machine because it doesn't take very much CPU. Awesome, it doesn't take very much memory. And the very thing I want is something that's not going to add a lot of noise and something that won't add any like fan noise and something that won't add heat to a studio.
Awesome, right?
Yeah.
Super awesome. Or, hell, get a copy of Synchronet BBS server.
There you go.
Recompile it because it'll compile on ARM. There's people that have done work on that. Put it on one of these bad boys for $35. You throw in a 4-gig SSD card. Boom.
Boom.
You can have your own dedicated, say, 100-line BBS server running off of the palm of your hand and just stick it somewhere and forget it because it makes no noise and takes almost no power.
Oh! All right.
So many options.
So, look, here's the thing, is when you have devices like these or devices like these, they are portable, they're mobile, you can lose them, right?
I guess.
You get lost. Also, you know, if you have a Linux laptop, and I one time almost crapped my pants, I left a laptop that I was being really lazy and I didn't have it locked when the screensaver came on because I was working on this project and I was stepping away, coming back, stepping away, coming back. And I left the client with my laptop there, and of course I had client data on it.
Oof.
I couldn't remember though if I'd left it there or if I'd left it somewhere else, like at the office.
It's rough.
And so this is where a piece of software called Prey would have been awesome. And that's what Matt's going to talk about in his how-to segment, which is brought to you by System76. They hooked us up with a Wild Dog performance machine.
No.
Dude.
No. They hooked Matt up.
Yeah.
Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you, he was Skyping in last week from his Wild Dog with the new version of Skype and an HD webcam. One of the best remote pictures I'd ever seen. Thank you to System76 for
taking that guy down.
How-to segment.
Me and Matt, we're going to go mano a mano.
And whoever wins takes the Wild Dog.
Whoever wins takes the friggin' Wild Dog.
You better wait till you're a little healthier, though.
Yeah. He would kick my butt so bad right now.
All right, so let's toss it to Matt.
He's going
to
kick my butt no matter what.
Brian, Matt.
I am so puny. My arms have like no muscles on.
Brian! Matt!
Hey everyone, have you ever thought to yourself, oh no, what if my laptop gets stolen, or oh, someone broke into my home and potentially stole my computer tower with all my state secrets on it, or something, you know, equally important, or maybe even your mobile phone? Did you know that there is actually web-based software that can help? And I say web-based in that all the action happens on the web, however, there is actually a local client that will run on Android, that will run on Ubuntu, and it installs relatively simple. The first thing I'm going to show you is actually how it works. So we're going to watch a video just real quick, giving you a quick little rundown as to what this looks like when this guy installs it on a Mac. And you can see the installation is fairly simple. You get some emails about what's going on and so on and so forth. Basically, it's going to give you a location of where the laptop last reports in, actual webcam snapshots of the person that ganked your laptop, which is pretty cool. But I actually, just because I, you know, reading about it, one thing, watching videos on it's one thing, but to actually experience it is a very different. I actually signed up for the pro service to see what this would look like. And I did so with the Wild Dog Performance PC. And of course, this is just for this segment. I've obviously uninstalled it since then. And it is open source software, so I'm not concerned about being rootkitted or any conspiracy theory type stuff in that respect. It's perfectly safe. So it's running well at this moment. It's set up as okay because I happen to have this in a safe location. I know that it's with me. I know it's safe. It's perfectly okay. And as you can see, the reports, if you do report it stolen, are fairly straightforward. Let's go ahead and jump right into that. Now, before we get into the reports, though, I want to kind of show you what a control panel looks like for a pro user. This is pretty cool. Is it missing? Yes. No. Save changes. Pretty simple. Good. Bounce that back. The activation mode. How frequently do I want it to check? Do I want it to do it on an interval or do I want it to do it on demand? On demand and interval, basically the difference there is that I'm saying if I do it on demand, I can report it stolen, but nothing will actually take place until I've actually clicked on save changes and then run Prey, which is right here. So if I was to actually do that, it would, in fact, run it on this computer, which I'm not going to do just because it's not needed. Now, all that being said, it's not perfect. There are some things that didn't work. Jumping out of this and actually showing you a screenshot of what did work, and then I'll cover what didn't work. Let me do that right now. Okay. So I actually took a screenshot of this because I didn't want to obviously divulge where I live and all that sort of stuff. I want to keep some, you know, a bit of privacy there. So I blurred some things out, but it gives you an idea of what that looks like. What it does effectively for an Ubuntu user is I found that it does a good job with providing a very, really very accurate location based on wireless triangulation with a notebook as to where you're at. And it does it very in a very stealth kind of way. You really wouldn't know what was going on unless you knew what to look for. It's very cool. And if you have a webcam attached, it will actually capture you quite nicely. In addition to that, it will provide the MAC address, the gateway private IP, as well as the remote IP, so you can see exactly where they're at, what's going on, which system it is, and so on and so forth. But with all this information, this is stuff that you can actually then turn over to the police if your stuff is stolen and say, look, I've got an image of this guy. He ripped off my laptop. What are we going to do about it? You know, that kind of stinks. Now, there unfortunately are some things on the Ubuntu side of it that did not work as expected, and this hopefully will be working in the future because it really bummed me out that it didn't work for me. The first thing I found that didn't work for me, although I did follow the instructions for Linux users as far as I think it was installing MP3, 123, and that sort of thing, was the alarm function. That did not work. Even with everything set up properly, it just simply wasn't working. The biggest issue that I had is that the alert feature did not work. So you have alarm, you have alert. These features did not work at all. That really bummed me out because on other platforms, you can actually have it spit up a message like old Windows Messenger style saying, hey, dude, you stole my laptop. You need to give it back to me. Or potentially, hey, this laptop was found on accident. Can you return it to so-and-so? Actually, to broadcast that on your device itself is rather important. And of course, you can insert whatever information you want here, but this is their suggested message to send. Also, the changing of the wallpaper. This is awesome because you can actually change the wallpaper to reflect the fact that the laptop is in fact stolen. It's real hard to be stealth at a coffee shop when your wallpaper is locked in as, hey, this is a stolen laptop, warning, you know, that sort of thing. Kind of a big deal. So the other issue is then, of course, the locking mechanism. This was a deal breaker for me as far as wanting to stick with the pro setup. I'll probably use this still, but I would more than likely use it as the free setup because I can't get the locking mechanism to work. There is an option to lock up the computer so that if someone did in fact steal it, you know, they can't even – once they've logged out, they can't get back into it. And that, of course, is with the understanding that you have the guest account set up, and I'll show you the configuration for that. Because obviously, for any of this to be effective and for it to log in, you obviously would need to have them log in so that you can get a picture of them and get an idea where they're at. The last option that really kind of let me down was the secure option. I've read this works for some Linux users, but I didn't have success with it. And that's basically where it's going to go through and clean out all the files and your browser history and anything of importance that might have your banking information. Perhaps it's a documents folder with something. All the different things of whatever you set it up to clean out. And it says here on the actual display, hides emails, deletes browser cookies and stored passwords for all accounts on your computer, preventing access to unauthorized users. It is also warning you to only do that if you are absolutely sure you're wanting to do that, because you can't get it back, of course, if you do that. But based on my experience, that did not work. Now, jumping back once again to what did work, I did find that the webcam option worked really well. I was really happy to see that because, honestly, that would have been a real issue for me if you couldn't at least get a snapshot of the guy who ripped you off. Geolocation worked well. The network stuff here, which is basically the detailed network information such as your IP address, local, and otherwise. And of course, you can get Wi-Fi with nearby hotspots. I found that to work as well. Traceroute worked. All that good stuff. Screenshot did not work, unfortunately. But not to worry, the long list of what worked and what didn't work for Ubuntu users, I'll make sure that's in the show notes. Suffice it to say, it's very cool, but I think that it's needs a little work. Again, it's really, really good at actually producing something that you can, again, see where the computer is and actually see who stole it, and that's cool, but I'm not entirely sure that I'm going to recommend going with a pro account just yet. It's neat, but I'm not sure it's quite there yet. It's an open source project, so it's bound to develop over time. And, you know, I might personally continue to give them some cash based on the subscription model in the hopes that they will fix these features, because honestly, that would be really awesome. I'm really happy with that. So let's go ahead and actually look at the configuration here. And bear in mind, this is from the deb package that is provided from their website and not from the one in the Software Center. Listen to me carefully. The Software Center package that comes with Ubuntu 12.04 is basically a shell script. And so if you want the actual, you know, GUI experience, make sure to grab the latest 5.3 release of Prey. So we got the dialog box with it all installed up here, and you can see everything's here. So basically, the options are pretty simple. Just out of the box, if you want a frequency of reported actions, you know, I like 10 minutes. That seems pretty good. You'll want to make absolutely sure you're enabling the guest account. And, of course, the Wi-Fi auto-connect, it's not mandatory, but it is helpful. If they happen to be running with Wi-Fi offline, it's nice to know that it's still going to connect so you can see what's going on. Now, that being said, once you've made your changes there, you're going to want to pop into the reporting mode. I'm a big believer in sticking with recommended settings unless you know what you're doing. There's no compelling reason for most people to mess with these settings here at all. And under reporting mode, leave it at Parade and Control Panel. That's what I would do. And, of course, you can then process through and go forward into the other goodies and actually finish the installation process. But once you're all done, you can hit Apply, and your configuration is saved. And then, of course, you can pop back into Pray and actually see what you got. So that's really all there is to it. Low jack for your computer. It's cheap. I forget exactly how much I ended up paying for it. I think it was like $5 or $7 or something like that a month. It was really, really cost effective. The takeaways, is it worth it to pay for it versus the free version? I think it is, just because I want to see this develop. If having some security for your mobile device or your laptop and things like that are important, you can add more than one device to Prey. You can actually, if you have an Android phone and a laptop, yeah, maybe paying for the Pro Edition would be more worthwhile. Pro Edition also allows you to store up to 100 reports, so that if your laptop is stolen, you're not going to lock in at whatever the default number of reports are that it gives you for free. It's pretty minimal. At 100 for the pro level, I think that's really worthwhile. So definitely check it out. And you can name it anything you want. It has full control, full remote control on that whole thing. And assuming they get some of the stuff caught up on, I think it's going to be worth pursuing. So I will provide all that in the show notes. That is the Prey Project, low jack for your Ubuntu computer or Android device. That's all there is to it. Back to you guys.
I would like to hear some feedback.
All right, B-Man, we got three emails that came into the phone.
You notice how I just ignored that Matt was just talking?
Oh, yeah.
I just ignored that sucker.
Thanks, Matt.
Forget that guy.
All right.
Forget that wild dog possessing man.
Wow. Wow. But now you'll know how to track your machine if it ever gets stolen.
I don't care. It's not a wild dog.
Okay. All right.
So feedback.
First email comes in from Raven. He says, hey, Raven. He says, hi, guys.
Hi.
You really need to review Sabayan 9. Like Sabayan. 9 KDE edition. It's 100% better than all previous
100%?
Releases. 100%?
That is so many percent.
I actually heard this from a few people. That's one of the reasons why I included this one. So, well, next week we're going to be talking about OpenSUSE, so we're not going to be talking about Sabayan.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to put it on the list again. It's been a long time since we looked at it.
It has been a long time. I think it was 6 or 7, maybe?
All right. So, Ray writes in, B-Man, you ready for this?
No.
Okay.
This is going to blow my mind.
I'm a big fan of your show.
Of course he is. Yep. Of course you are, Ray.
He's been watching.
Next feedback.
Okay. The next question comes. No. Ray wants to know a good way to learn IT quick because his company's making some changes at Linux quick. He wants some ways to learn Linux quick because his company's making changes in their IT department. So, Brian, do you have any tips for fast ways to learn Linux?
Absolutely. If you've got 3 days, Gentoo.
That's not bad. That's not bad. If you got 3 days, yeah.
You know, put yourself through torture, and I know. Gentoo is not torture once you know what you're doing. But if you don't know what you're doing, yeah. It's torture.
Yeah.
But it's 3 days of torture, and in the end, you yeah. will know what you're doing,
yeah.
or you won't, and you will realize that you should never touch Linux.
You might want to give yourself, if you're going to do it like over a period of a few days, you might want to give yourself like 5 days if you're doing it like in the evenings.
Give yourself some time. Give yourself some rewards. Be like, if I can actually compile some of this damn stuff,
yeah,
I get a brownie.
The first time it boots on its own.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out to pizza,
yeah.
and I'm getting myself a giant pitcher of Dr. Pepper
yeah.
because I deserve it. Like yeah. just treat yourself nice those 3 days. Reward the hell out of yourself. And then in the end you'll feel really good about it all. You'll have a working Gentoo system where you'll feel like you screwed up a bunch of stuff, but you'll know what you screwed up, you'll know how to do it better the next time, and you'll know Linux well enough to do what you need to do.
That's true. Also, you know, keep watching podcasts. That's a good way to go. Really, it is.
Or as some people are saying, Slackware. My recommendation
is really
Gentoo is a good way to get your feet in the door. Like some people would recommend going Arch or something like that, but really with Arch there's a lot of stuff you can just miss because Arch does a great job of, you know, putting documentation together and just kind of walking you through.
You could actually make a course out of, like, you know, okay class, for the first few days we're going to do this portion of the Gentoo installer.
Yep.
And then yeah. All right, so last question isn't really a question. It's more of a recommendation. I've thought about doing this myself, so I loved it that Peter sent this along. So Peter writes in. He says, hi there. Maybe a good tip for everyone. I
recommend you get a SATA switch. You know, like, so you can actually physically, so you power off your machine and you chunk, kind of old school, and you select the SATA drive you want to boot from. So you take power from one, you send power to another,
yeah.
And you actually are physically isolating your disk. So you could be, okay, all right, I hit this button, and now it's my Windows drive. I hit this button, it's my Linux machine.
It's kind of cool to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do this via the BIOS right now for my Hackintosh. I have Lion, Windows, and Ubuntu on there.
Right.
And I could have gone this route, I guess. So, yeah, so thank you to Peter who wrote that.
This would be even more secure because then those drives wouldn't even be connected anymore.
Yeah, that's what he goes on to say. Is he uses one hard drive for banking, stocks, internet, shopping, one hard drive for Linux daily use, one is just for testing Linux distros and BSD, and then the fourth drive is for Windows testing.
If his
Windows machines gets totally mucked up with malware...
It doesn't matter. Everything else is fine.
Right.
So, that's a good way to go.
A good tip there. So thanks, Peter.
Yeah, thank you. Pitar.
All right, B-Man. Well, folks, if you want to get a hold of us, you can go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com and hit the contact link at the top of the page. We have a form over there now where you just select the show you want to send your feedback to, and it takes care of sending it to the right place and all that kind of stuff. So just find the contact button over there. And, of course, while you're over there, visit the bottom of the site and use some of our affiliate links before you shop over at Amazon US, UK, Newegg, ThinkGeek, Best Buy, Mint.com, Audible. New thing we have, Code School. We are now an affiliate for Code School. God. Dude, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Code School is awesome. Check it out. Code School is, I don't know, I'm super impressed with it. But they don't have courses on everything. Like Fortran. I don't believe they have courses on Fortran.
Why no Fortran?
I love Fortran. I've talked to them and they're going to add it.
So go ahead and open up the Pascal course real quick.
Okay. All right. Here, I'll get that while you. Why don't you plug something while I do that?
Go to lunduk.com.
All right. Well, then I can't open up the Pascal thing.
My plugs nowadays are really easy. All my crap is open source. If you go to lunduk.com, you can see it. I mean, it's not like I need to come on here every day and be like, everybody, I have a brand new release. Yeah, there's new releases of stuff all the time. It's all open source. Go grab it and download it and compile it and contribute back to it, whatever. If you want to donate money, that's great. I don't know. What else I got?
There you go.
That's what I do.
So check it out. And there you have it. So you can find that at lunduk.com. All right, B-Man. Well, Linux Action Show is live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific over at jblive.tv or jblive.am or FM.
This is a completely a side thing.
Okay.
So I just want to end the show talking about one thing that's kind of random.
All right. I had a sip of water, so I'm ready.
I've had some nice email exchanges with Stallman over the last couple of weeks.
Your pen pal?
Yeah, my buddy pen pal Richard Stallman. And you know, I just want to say this. Very, very gracious and nice.
Yeah.
Everything's been very cordial and very supportive of each other, and it's been really nice. It's been really nice to have kind of those sorts of conversations with someone that maybe I disagree with on so many levels, but we've kind of been able to kind of see where we agree with each other and kind of come to that. And I really like that. And I kind of want to give, you know, Stallman, RMS, kind of a kudo. Someone in the chat room asked when the wedding. No wedding.
Oh, we could have broadcasted that, because, though.
Yeah, he likes parrots. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I don't want to say that.
He does like... Well, don't give him a parrot.
I read something about don't give him a parrot.
Don't give him a parrot.
I just thought that was the funniest thing.
There are a lot
ever.
Of responsibility.
But no, it was very cordial, very nice, and it's been very, very pleasant. On the other hand... No. Yeah, till now. Now there's going to be a parrot war between us.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, some of you may have seen, as I go through this whole trying to make a living off of doing open source thing that I've been doing, some people have been angry about it. Some people have gotten upset about it, and I've been trying to figure out why. And I kind of threw this out there to people on like G+ and a few other places. I'm like, what is going on with some of these folks? Some folks just seem genuinely pissed off at the idea that someone would earn a living making open source software or working on it. I mean, and it's not many people. It's just this few couple of people. And I just wanted to throw this out there because our buddy Aaron Saigo chimed in with this thought. And I kind of want to leave you guys with this. It's the crabs in a bucket thing. Where you take a bucket of crabs that you've been fishing out of the harbor.
Okay.
If those crabs, there's six crabs in that bucket.
Yeah, six crabs.
They could easily jump out of that bucket if they work together. You know, they could kind of stand on each other and help each other get out. They have claws and legs and they're long enough. They could totally get out of that bucket to safety if they wanted to. But they're crabs in a bucket. They see one crab getting up there and doing good. They're going to claw and grab at that crab and just yank him down. And because of that... Crabs never escape from buckets.
That sounds like communism.
Does that sound like communism to you? But no, they kind of got me thinking. And you know what? And some people, like Aaron Sagan, a few other people have mentioned that they've seen that a lot within the open source community, where most people are supportive, but there's just this motley crew out there that are the crabs in our buckets,
right?
That are just seeing people try and succeed, and they just pull them down. And it's not just that, you know, people are trying to pull me down or something like that. I've seen people do the same thing for the Parted Magic guy. The Parted Magic guy is trying to raise like 3 cents. Like, this guy is trying to raise like almost no money. And I've seen people complain that he's trying to do it.
I think the problem
is... And it's a very, very small minority. But man, are those guys loud. And I just wanted to make that call out there. Do you know what? There's a lot of you guys out there that have been supportive. Guys and gals. Supportive. Mm. Awesome. Some of you guys have kind of stayed on the sidelines. Some of you guys have gotten in the fray. Some of you guys have gotten really involved. And you're all pretty awesome. And we're all trying to support each other, even if we're trying to do things a little differently, because we're in it for the same cause. There's just a couple people out there that are trying to be loud.
People like crab with butter, Brian.
Well, crab is delicious.
And if they crawl out of the bucket, they don't get to have crab with butter.
Well, but see, if they crawl out of the bucket, then they're free and they could eat other crabs. But if they stay in the bucket, they could eat themselves.
But who eats the crab?
Well, I do.
Exactly.
But I don't want to be in the bucket.
No, the crabs
are all in the bucket, is what I'm saying.
Maybe some people aren't in the bucket. Maybe they want you to stay in the bucket.
Okay, now I just want crab.
I know, because people love crab. This is the problem with the crab analogy, is you're going to get people on the side of staying in the bucket because they like crab and butter.
Anyway.
It's flawed, man. It's flawed.
I just wanted to throw that out there because it kind of sparked some interesting conversations. And one of the reasons I want to say this is I know people are saying Google Plus is dead. But man, some of the greatest conversations I've had over the last few weeks have been happening over on Google
Plus. It depends on Google Plus. You know, there's some, like, I think it's got a higher tech crowd ratio than
maybe that's what it is. But like, we're having conversations with great people. You know, the guy who used to do the This Week in Linux that now is over on XDA forum. You know, Aaron Saigo, a bunch of other great folks are hanging out on the Google Plus, having really interesting conversations, and it's a phenomenal place to be. So you can find the links over on the site and everywhere else.
All the show notes there, B-Man.
The notes and the such.
All right. Well, there you go.
That's all I had to say.
Okay, everyone. Well, thanks so much
for
tuning into This Week and hearing all about Brian's crabs. We'll be right back here next week.
Open Web OS. Open Web OS is here. Open Web OS is here.
I wish I had like a narcolepsy that happened just like one time ever. But then I could use that as an excuse to be like, oh, sorry, narcolepsy.